Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's two old queens. It's two old queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two old queens. It's two old queens. Now shut up.
Hello.
Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Oh, Mark, I am so excited. Our month of listener submitted movies is continuing. Please let us know who's joining us.
Well, we have an actual professor of history with us. It's Aaron Dwyer.
Yay. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome. An actual professor of history. That's
yeah, I don't think we've had that before. I'm pretty sure we've had a lot of improvisers, but not a lot of history professors.
You have to do that a lot in the classroom, but the jokes don't always land.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular area of history you specialize in?
The history of slavery and the history of murder and where they intersect.
Really?
Wow, yeah. That's fun.
So it's, you know, it's pretty dark stuff, and I think that's in part why I'm drawn to the sort of campy in my
you need a break,
you know. Do I want to watch Last of Us at the end of a day of reading about poison and murder and enslaved people being executed? Not so much.
Yeah, because when did murder start? Like, I guess there there was always, you had to have laws, I would think, you know what I mean? Like cavemen, like, we're like, hey, wait a second, we shouldn't be going around killing each other.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I teach a class on the history of murder, and we start with what are our definitions of it. It's not a practicum. There's no lab, but we do a mock trial of Lizzie Borden. So that's the closest I get to like directing.
Oh, fine. That is fine. How would you say, of all the years you've been teaching, how well does she usually do? Like, is it?
Not great. The Gen Z, they want to come for her, and they're not interested in the historical accuracy that in real life she beat the charges. And so, the first time I did it, they, you know, hands down, they convicted her. And the second time it was a hung jury. And so they let me vote. And so I voted to acquit her. There's not enough evidence. Let her live.
But she's a crazy young woman.
There's an axe.
She's a woman taking control.
Send her off to a camp.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really fascinating.
Yeah.
I have a gavel and everything.
Wow.
Ooh. You love the theatrics of it all.
Exactly.
Theatrics of murder.
How has our understanding of murder like changed over time? Like as to where, like how do, has like the status of what does it mean to be a murderer like different now than it was like 100 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading a lot of cases where enslaved people are getting burned at the stake. Again, this is not light stuff because sure. It's considered treason. It's considered that your owner is your little king.
Yeah.
And so that's a change that happens over time. But yeah, I do think one thing you see across time is a fascination with motive, a lot of victim blaming over time of wanting to make sense of why it's that person's fate. And not my own. And my own, this main project is about poison, my current book project. And so, you know, the people who poison you have to be people who have close access to your food and drink.
Right.
And that's unnerving for many. Sure. Yeah. So that's what I spend my days doing.
Well, good for you. Someone's got to do it.
Doing the work for the rest of us.
Thank you.
And, you know, speaking of doing the work.
Sure.
Today, we're talking about, but I'm a cheerleader. John, what's the deal with, but I'm a cheerleader?
Mark, let me tell you the deal with, but I'm a cheerleader. It was directed by Jamie Babbitt, written by Brian Wayne Peterson, and it is a delightfully campy journey into the world of Maggie Bloomfield, an innocent high school cheerleader who faces an intervention from her well-meaning but misguided friends and family who suspect she might be a lesbian. They send her to a residential inpatient conversion therapy camp to cure her lesbianism. At camp, Megan realizes that she is indeed a lesbian, and despite the therapy, comes to embrace her sexuality. It stars Natasha Lyonne, Clea DuVall, Melanie Lynskey, RuPaul, Kathy Moriarty, Mink Stole, Bud Cort, and Eddie Cibrian. It was released on July 7th, 2000, and made $2.6 million off a budget of $1 million. Roger Ebert said, "But I'm a cheerleader. It's not a great breakout comedy, but more the kind of movie that might eventually become a regular on the midnight cult circuit." And David Noh from Film Journal International called it a candy-coated, completely negligible bit of fluff that plays like an emasculated John Waters. But in 2005, a musical version of But I'm a Cheerleader premiered at New York Musical Theater Festival and has since had performances in London. And that is the deal with But I'm a Cheerleader.
So, Aaron, when we put out a call for submissions, you did an amazing PowerPoint presentation making the case for But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yes, we should point out 5 other people also submitted this movie, but your PowerPoint won
put you over the top.
Oh, that's very flattering. First of all, all my brothers and sisters who also submitted.
So for those who didn't submit for those who didn't read your PowerPoint, why But I'm a Cheerleader? And also, why PowerPoint? Have you always had an affinity for PowerPoint? I guess it's a 2-part question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was certainly going to do essay. And then I think in a tweet, you started to throw out other mediums.
Yeah.
Including PowerPoint. And I was just finishing my semester. And the debate was, do I grade essays or do I make a PowerPoint, which I'd spent all semester doing? And so really, it felt like this truly is my nerd milieu, and sure. So why not lean into it? And this will either get you put on a list, or they'll be impressed enough that they'll, you know, can't help but pick you. So
could be both.
You're still on a list. Thank you. You know, among others.
Yeah.
PowerPoint, the academic in me, you know, has really been leaning into them as a visual medium throughout, going back and forth from teaching online to teaching in person. And you know, film's a visual medium, so why not convey through slide fashion that I felt like this is really a film from that great 90s period where there did feel like kind of a flourishing of indie films that really had queer representation, where before it felt, you know, as a millennial of a certain age, before then it felt like, you know, back in my day, we just had subtext. We didn't have all these queer texts.
Yeah. Right.
And it started to feel like there was a flourishing of them. And it was around the time that there was also a lot of queer representation of queer women, bisexual and lesbian women, that felt like it was by and for straight men, sort of you're chasing Amy's, your wild things.
Sure.
And this really felt not at all like that. And it came out, I guess, my first semester of college, but I didn't see it until I was home that summer. It was my last time going back to my small town for the summer and feeling marooned there and just watching it over and over and renting it over and over again from Blockbuster or what have you. So I've seen this innumerable times and was shocked when I kept stopping writing my over-the-top proposal to go and make sure that y'all had not done it already. It felt like,
I know,
surely you must have done this already. So I'm glad we can correct this. And I hope that all the others who proposed it feel like I'm a good representative for this film.
I think it's in good hands for sure.
Yes, yes.
What about you, John? Had you seen But I'm a Cheerleader before?
I somehow had not seen But I'm a Cheerleader before. I'd seen snippets of it and, you know, here and there. But for whatever reason, I missed it when it came out and didn't get to catch it until now. And it was so delightful. It was very sweet. It did feel like a sweet John Waters movie in that, like, it wasn't too crazy, but it's a little crazy. Definitely has fun with, like, stereotypes and all that stuff. But it was a very sweet movie that I enjoyed watching. And it was also, like,
hot take.
I know. it was sort of also fun to be like, oh, all of these actors have gone on. So many of the people in this movie have gone on to very significant careers. So I'm glad I finally saw it. How about you, Mark? What is your take on But I'm a Cheerleader?
I'm pretty sure I saw it in theaters when it came out, but I haven't seen a lot since then. And I also realized while I was watching it, it was like, when I thought of But I'm a Cheerleader, I often thought of Slums of Beverly Hills. Like, those two would kind of, like, overlap in my brain because they're both, like, Natasha Lyonne indies. I was like, well, what does Alan Arkin show up? He doesn't. But rewatching, it's a blast. I love a big swing with a color story, and this one does it. Like, despite the low budget, it still has, like, a great look. It's still fun to watch. It still, like, creates its own world. And I thought it was just really charming, delightful. I thought it's, like, moves really quickly, and just all the performances are so winning. And even the villains you like. Like, even, what's not to like about Kathy Moriarty?
Right.
A true pleasure. Yeah, in 86 minutes, you can't beat that. Shorter than the Secession finale.
True. And less devastating.
Yes, very that.
But it sounds like we're all fans to varying degrees, but only one of us made a PowerPoint. So, Aaron, as you may or may not know, but I suspect you do, we are looking for the gayest movies ever. So we have a complex and Byzantine scoring system with which to judge them. So we're going to go through a ton of categories. And at one point, you are going to come up with a category, and it will be added to the wheel. Do you know what that means?
Oh, you betcha.
Yay. Okay. They're the first one. So this is our current top five gayest movies ever. So this is what you are up against. And we got a new top five since last week as well. In fifth place with a 92.20%, Showgirls. In fourth place with a 92.99%, The Bride of Frankenstein. In third place with a 93.21%, Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And new entry at number two with a 94.75% is Zero Patience. And number one with a 94.83% is The Reigning Champ, Female Trouble.
All right, Aaron, so if you had to guess now, how well do you think But I'm a Cheerleader is going to do?
I boldly stated that I thought it could crack the top five. I'm still going to go with that blind confidence. I think it has a lot going for it. I think the wheel is really going to have to, you know, be on my side.
Sure.
Because, wow, you know, Zero Patience coming in hot. That was really a movie no one has heard of that is now the second gayest film that everyone will be trying to track down. All five copies that exist on, like, Canadian Blu-rays.
We're really affecting the market.
Yes, just really putting the cult in cult classic. That's going to be
exactly.
I'm still hopeful. I think as long as it does better than Ginger Snaps and Blue Crush.
Okay. Hey, wow. Those are the two you have your sights on.
Right.
Ginger Snaps is at 89th place with a 64.92. And Blue Crush is a lot lower, I think. Blue Crush is in 173rd place with a 36.58. So I think you're fine there.
I think you're definitely going to do that part of your wish.
Well, let's get into it. So the first group of categories are the canon categories. So for these, we're each going to give a score between 0 and 100. Then we'll take the average of all three of our scores. So, Aaron, what would you give But I'm a Cheerleader on a scale of 0 to 100 in actual gay characters?
Well, so obviously most of the primary characters are gay, are queer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the question does come in, what is our read on Kathy Moriarty's character on Rock? And I think we can say RuPaul is meant to be. We are meant to read RuPaul as a man who is not.
He's denying his self.
And so how do
and
we
I also think Rock is like clearly
that?
Pretty gay.
I think that's entirely why his mother found it. Well, although you have to, when would she have founded the school based on Lloyd and Larry being alumni? It seems like it predates him. So maybe it's about her own queer anxiety that she's afraid of. But she never, you know, so I have a hard time labeling them as gay because I also hate that trope of they're just homophobic because they're secretly gay.
Right. Because sometimes they're just homophobic and assholes.
I think hate is a powerful force in history. And also, how is it any different to be like, Mike Pence is gay? How is that different than what they...
Right.
You're still lobbing
Let's
it as
face
an insult.
It's hack material. That's like true. Using Nickelback as a punching bag. Too easy.
Exactly. So I'm going to say, I guess I would say, given how many of the main characters are queer and how fundamental that is to their characters, but I'm not going to label Kathy Moriarty as gay or Rock. We don't know.
I think it's safe to say Rock is.
I think he's pretty safe.
He's dancing to RuPaul.
Jerking off that.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing.
And I'm going to go 88.
88.
I'm going to go 93. I think they're pretty much all about that life.
All about that life. I'll go 92, given an average of 91, which is 21 points higher than In-N-Out.
Okay.
All right. Our next category, gay icons. How are we doing on gay icons? Where don't we have gay icons? More like this is the first time I think we've had a movie where someone says the phrase gay iconography.
Right. And they hold a picture of Melissa Etheridge. Oh.
Yeah. Yes, and in my PowerPoint, I accidentally said Indigo Girls, so that's on me.
Wow.
Not knowing
part
my,
of the problem.
Mistaking right. my queer yeah. icons, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah, I mean...
You got that. You got Melissa. You got RuPaul. You got Mink Stoll. You got Kathy Moriarty. You got
Clea Duvall.
Natasha Lyonne, who has... So not only has Natasha Lyonne been performed by the famous Jinx Monsoon on Snatch Game, but Clea Duvall and Natasha Lyonne were hosts on RuPaul's Drag Race on back-to-back episodes on season 11.
What more do you need to do?
There you go.
I mean, if you go back and watch Clea Duvall's face while she watches Brooklyn Heights up against Evie Oddly, and she's just, she can't even believe her good luck being in the front
seat
for that.
She's a part of all this, right, yeah.
So yeah, Clea Duvall unquestioningly is a lesbian icon, didn't she direct that movie?
Happiest Season.
There you go. So I think that makes her not just a lesbian icon, but a gay icon.
Absolutely.
And I think you could make a case for Melanie Lynskey. Between Heavenly Creatures.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You can make a case for Michelle
actresses.
Williams, too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Julie Delpy, I don't know.
No, the film Gays for the Before Sunrise trilogy.
A very mighty, mighty branch of film Gays.
She smokes enough cloves of cigarettes
most
to
of
be
film
adjacent.
Gays, most of film Twitter are the Gays, I was going to say. So, to be fair, John. Also, that song, Chick Habit. That also shows up in Death Proof. I feel like that now is like someone drag queen has done. I feel like that gets done at least once a week somewhere.
Yeah, a lot of sweet deep cuts on the music. I did not look up kind of the sexuality of most of the performers. But yeah, I think this is swimming in gay icons. I think this has, I mean, yeah, Mink Stoll, RuPaul would be a 100, even if it wasn't for Natasha Lyonne, Melanie Lynskey, and Clea Duvall. Yeah. So yeah, I say 100 without a doubt.
100.
I'll say 97.
90. What else does it need, John?
I guess if Melissa Etheridge showed up and actually sang a song, then I'd give it 100.
With that $1 million budget, she's volunteering. It's pro bono work.
She ain't doing it. Yeah. I'll give it 100, giving it an average of 99, which is, I don't know, 14 points higher than Bound. All right. Our next category, the queer gaze. How much queer imagery do we have here made for queer people by queer people? I think mostly queer image. It's very high.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all the stuff with the cheerleaders.
And there's also stuff for the gays
eating hot dogs,
you know,
out bus windows. I mean, incredible being part of your like fantasy where you realize your route. And there were a lot of close-ups where you'd sort of see the stolen glances or the stolen touches through a hole, which made it feel all the more like
taboo.
Yeah,
Just Eddie Cibrian's styling is like that's for the gays.
Come on,
and we thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, and when RuPaul's underneath the car, you know, and you sort of, the camera pans from his thrusting under the car back to all of the male students watching him and then back to the car again. Yeah, it's really hyper focused on that gaze for sure.
And just the whole, I think even just like the color story, just like the strong use of color in this movie just feels like a pretty queer slash camp sensibility, just to the aesthetics of the movie overall too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that and a lesbian director who's done so much really fun, kind of similarly quirky tonally stuff. Not a lot of people watch Santa Clarita Diet, but I loved that. What else she did? I think
there's still an ad for Santa Clara. I walk when I go get my haircut at Echo Park. There's a house that has like a fake realtor sign in front of it for Santa Clarita Diet. Like it's a picture of Timothy Olyphant, Drew Barrymore, and it's been there for years. Yeah, it's outlasted the show.
Wow.
Yes, by a minute. Yeah.
So queer gaze. What do we think?
I'll go 95.
Yeah, I'll go 90.
Not very much nudity, not much kind of, I mean, it's closely related, I think, to the homoeroticism, which there isn't, it's not going to score quite as highly in, but I think it's very clearly directed by a queer person.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree. I will go 95 as well.
95. I'm going 100. I think, like, what more does it need to do? I think I like that it is, like, for a younger audience, you know, it almost like it's so
like
close,
a young, like, adult movie kind of.
I think you take out a few swears and it's a PG-13 movie. Like there's such a sweetness to it.
Yeah, it's like baby's first John Waters film.
Yeah, I guess if they can't handle hairspray, I mean, yeah, they can handle hairspray.
Why don't you like pink flamingos? There's all kinds of things in it that kids love.
Yeah,
whistling buttholes, absolutely.
Flamingos.
Hey, got an average of 96.67, which is 61 points higher than In-N-Out. That makes sense. Okay. All right. Our next category, the Mike Pence anxiety scale. How much anxiety do you think this movie would give Mike Pence? I think mostly anxiety.
Mostly. I mean, what's weird is that you think at first he might be like, now here's a movie that's talking sense.
Right.
But then, no.
Yeah, that's the only thing I went back and forth on. My first viewing earlier in the week, I thought he'd be in a panic because it's really highlighting how this gay conversion camp not only doesn't convert them to straight, but it effectively turns more of them
activates them
queerer
a little
more, than ever. Yeah, and fighting vocally for other queer people. But then on second rewatch, I was thinking, you know, but a lot of people go to that graduation and don't get in the truck at the end. And you know, confirmation bias is a hell of a drug. So would he look at that ratio and think, well, you know, well, we saved, you know, five gay souls. So I've gone back and forth. But obviously, I mean, this almost had an NC-17 rating. So I think that alone would upset him. I think female pleasure he would find troubling to no end.
I don't think he'd like all the pastels and the too much color.
I think he'd say he wouldn't like it, but I think he'd like it.
Sure. He'd like the brown and orange scenes at first.
That tension.
People are
going to
find out that I like this.
Yeah, that tension will give him anxiety. I think it's pretty high.
Okay, I want to hear you go first on this.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, I will go. I'm going to go 90 because I think all of it's there, but I think it's also not that in your face. Like there's a sweetness to it that I think he could sort of sit with a little longer. But I think ultimately it's goes against fundamentally what he thinks and believes. And there is a lot of same-sex kissing. So 90.
I'll also go 90.
Yeah, and I bet he'd hate the kind of the fig leaves in that scene. I think he'd find that. I would go 88. I still do think he'd be pleased with how many people graduated.
All right.
It was weird. I guess like they couldn't show them just like smashing their awards or whatever like this. You know, I guess there's no, but also like, I'm glad the movie ended quickly. So it's hard to complain about like, oh, there weren't enough endings, you know?
And I'm glad that it ends on the note.
On the way to the end.
Yeah. That it ends on the note that it does, I think is a good way of saying, we don't have to be worried that, you know, these are going to be houseless teenagers now because they chose one another. Yeah.
They also very quickly pretty much drop any anxiety about these kids, like wanting to change. You know what I mean? It just seems more like they're just in here to like, let's just get through this program.
Let's just pass this class so we
can move
on.
Let's just pass this class.
Poor little Andre, not knowing his route. He tried.
All right, our next category, Hell on Heels. How we doing on Feisty Ladies? Well, Graham.
Well, Graham.
Very tough.
Very feisty. Beginning.
She's up there with Meg.
Yeah, I mean, very feisty. And I think that's part of the allure is, you know, even in this conversion camp, she's not saying, you know, I'm a homosexual, she says, and I like girls a lot. It's like, you're not going to be contained. And all that smoking and even Melanie Linsky being so bossy when she's like, breakfast is at 7 and, you know, therapy until noon. I can't do, as you can see, I can't do.
It's perfect.
New Zealand accent.
Friend has the code word to get into New Zealand is big pick. Like you're wearing a big pick with all your school books. A big pick.
I think I'm a homosexual. It could be a new.
There you go.
And then obviously Kathy Moriarty. I mean, she's terrifying. Yeah. Everyone's terrified of her.
Even Lloyd is terrifying, but she's not that terrible. You know what I mean? But I think she is the epitome of like a hell on heels. But she is also like, this is a very funny performance from Kathy Moriarty.
Right.
Yeah. It's like if Cruella de Vil was made of flesh and blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only be so scared of someone who waters plastic plants.
And wears a plastic see-through like raincoat, pink plastic raincoat.
I would kill for that raincoat.
And Sinead gets snubbed and kind of becomes feisty a little bit. She at least gets surly.
As the film goes on. She's more. I'm saving her for the macabre, but yeah, I think she's certainly.
She can do both. Sinead contains multitudes.
One. Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah, I think all of them being willing to sneak out and go to the gay bar called the Cocksucker, really very incredible. Yeah, I think high for feisty women. Most of the women that we see on screen are feisty, with the exception of the sort of the panicked cheerleaders and heteronormative mothers. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to go like 85.
I'll go 88.
88. I'll go 87, giving an average of 86.67, which is 4 points higher than Zero Patients.
Take that, Zero Patients.
Take that. All right, our next one, I think you might do very well here. Drag queen inspiration. Could a drag queen watch this movie and come away with a whole book of ideas?
Absolutely. I'm honestly shocked we haven't seen the kind of pink vinyl 60s prom dress thing done before, especially with Clea DuVall's, the very kind of like 90s where you've got the updo but the long tendrils in your face.
Sure. 90s were huge for tendrils.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's like, I can't be bothered to put all my hair up. Yeah. So I think all of the kind of the pink and the blue pastel-y looks, the pink vinyl jacket.
There's also one like Mrs. Brown when she's like in her bed with her hair and curlers, like strumming a guitar. I was like, that's like a really fun combination of things.
Megan wears a snood at some point, those nightgowns,
the sexual simulation suits.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, illusion netting up. I'd say most drag queens need to stay farther away from rather than embracing. I do think the other way that it is, you know, if you're talking about kind of big book of ideas, I think RuPaul really wrote a chapter here on how longevity in a drag career involves not just knowing how to act and that acting is such a, you know, huge overlap for drag performers, but also being able to perform as your persona in boy drag and not just in girl drag.
Right.
Because that is so much more, I mean, clearly it takes significantly less time. And I love that we get to see RuPaul's freckles in this. I think that's another real, a drag queen should come away with a whole book of ideas, not only about the kind of 90s take on the 60s and the color palette.
Do we think
palette.
This is RuPaul's best acting performance?
I mean, I saw AJ and the Queen.
We got AJ and the Queen.
I'm aware.
He's in the Brady Bunch movie for a hot second.
I think I would say this or Brady Bunch, but I thought RuPaul was really fun in this. Like,
I agree.
Fit the tone.
I think RuPaul's best acting work is every time RuPaul does a scene with Jeffrey Boyer Chapman.
Okay.
But I think RuPaul's second best acting work has to be this. And I would love a remake. For the 2020s, which I almost never say.
Peacock
with RuPaul
would
still
do
in
like
it.
A 8-episode series or something. It's like, but I'm still a cheerleader or something.
Still cheerleading.
And
crossover with the Netflix show Cheer. Right.
There you go. And also, I like that the house, the True Directions, is the same colors as the trans pride flag.
Yeah.
which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, fantastically. Yeah, the entire $1 million was just spent on paint and vinyl. And that really shows here. So yeah, I think, and those green satin sort of 1950s debutante dresses. Oh, gosh, they're so, in the very 60s hair. Yeah, I think a whole book of ideas. Yeah, 100.
100.
I will say, I'll go 94. I think there's a lot of stuff, but there's not, again, like that one classic look that's like
not
so
one.
Distinctly.
There's like a dozen. Is that
the
better?
One that you're like, oh, that is, but I'm a cheerleader. That you feel like, oh, that's what that thing. You know what I mean? Like a lot of
I think
movies,
if you did a cheerleader with that Natasha Lyonne hair, you would get, you'd know that. And also the graduation looks, you don't think?
Mm. Yes. Maybe because I've only seen it once.
Oh, and Sinead's look where she's wearing the uniform, but over her sort of with her goth embellishments for flair.
I'm going up full 100.
All right.
Give an average of 98, which is 2 points lower than Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, John.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Probably, maybe. All right. Finally, last of the canon category. Aaron, on a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend But I'm a Cheerleader to a gay person?
Yeah, I mean, 100. I've watched this with, I think, every woman I dated in college and grad school.
Was that the move?
Well, it's not.
Oh, did she invite you over to watch
But I'm a
Cheerleader?
It doesn't not get you laid afterwards. Yeah, I mean, it's sweet enough. And, you know, it had come out in that sort of window where everybody isn't necessarily watching movies as much. And so it was a good, lots
people
of people would say, oh, I'd not seen it.
Right.
Well, why don't you come back to my dorm room and we'll pop it in the VCR or what have you.
So
no, I've shown it to a ton of people. And I really do think that, I mean, obviously I think it's like lesbian 101, but I also think, like we've talked about, I think it's a good kind of entry level. You can show it to people who are, you know, younger, and they would, I think, could see themselves in a lot of the characters.
Because it is also like a coming out story itself, like coming to terms with the identity itself. So that's like almost perfect for teens. If this was split into like 50 different, you know, segments on TikTok, it would do gangbusters. Like.
Completely. You know, and if someone told me, you know, someone might not know who, if a Gen Z person doesn't know who Mink Stole is, maybe.
Idiots.
But they love Natasha Lyonne. You know, they just finished Poker Face and now they don't know what to watch. I'd say, well, do you want to watch her make out with the person cast as her sister for an hour and a half? That would not be how I sell it. But yeah, I think, and if you love Yellow Jackets, if you love Melanie Lynskey, I think there's a lot of ways, a lot of
there's
access
a lot of
points.
If you like drag, you know what I mean?
You're
it's
right.
Also, I think it does also appeal to gays and the whole Pride LGBTQI playhouse family. You know what I mean? Like there's room for everybody in this.
Yeah.
Which is like fairly rare. Usually like gay films are either one or the other.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that it's like, oh, bringing communities together.
Yeah. Yes. And I think you could show this to kind of older parents to get them talk, you know, have a teachable moment, you know, for everybody.
Sure.
I was going to propose our neighbors will often since the pandemic began, we'll throw up a white sheet on their garage and project movies. And this is definitely one I'm going to propose because I feel like, you know, this is a good one for the whole gayborhood to gather and watch together.
That sounds like a blast. So I heard 100 from Aaron. What about you, John?
Despite the fact that it has taken me 23 years to actually watch this movie, I will also give it 100.
Yeah, you gotta. Come on. I'll give it 100 as well. Giving it 100.
Righty.
Which is 1 point higher than In-N-Out. All right. Now we're into the wheel categories.
Spinning wheel.
These categories are all categories previous guests have brought in, and then put them all in this wheel, which is an app on my phone, which you can see so many categories. We're going to spin it once. Whatever category pops up, we'll use to judge this movie. Then Mark and I will pick a category from the movie. Then we have a listener wheel we're going to spin. And finally, you will come up with a category, which we'll use to judge this movie and add to the wheel and potentially use to judge all future movies. Here we go.
Perform a theme song for the movie.
We have to perform a theme song.
Okay.
So we all got to improvise a theme song for the movie, and then we judge how well we thought we did.
But I'm a cheerleader. I can't be gay.
But I'm a cheerleader. She can't be gay.
But I'm a, hey, ho.
I gotta eat out this hoe.
No homo. Hey. Ho.
Oh.
No. Ho,
one,
homo.
Two, three, four. Who are we making out here for? Five, six, seven, eight. Tell your parents you're not straight.
Aaron. Very good.
I love you. That was a great bridge.
I do not musical. That is not my genre.
You couldn't have told me.
Yeah, we would never have guessed that.
So what do we give ourselves on that?
I felt like we had a lot of ideas that maybe didn't all gel at one point, but I think they could.
Sure. I had fun doing it.
We all had a good time.
Sometimes the process is its own reward.
The journey is the destination.
Yes, and it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll give it a 60 because it tried. Y'all really, I'm pulling down the average, y'all.
I'll give it a 72 because it tried.
60, 72. I'll give it 75. Because we did that with very little time or warning. Or
we did.
Hey, give an average of
the wheel.
69. That's disgusting.
Oh, gross.
Me.
Gross.
All right. Now we're into host choice.
Okay.
I did have a thought for this one.
Let's hear what your thought is.
From Fried Green Tomatoes, bucking heteronormativity.
Ooh.
That's a good one. Some other ones that I picked were one from The Queen, Food as Character Development. Because they said in her intervention, you've been trying to get us to eat this tofu, and the fact that she's a vegetarian is something they use to accuse her of being a lesbian. There's also How Rainbow Bright Is It from Mean Girls.
Pretty rainbow bright.
Pretty rainbow bright. From Rebecca, Lesbian Gaslighting. Or from In-N-Out, Journey of Self-Acceptance. Those are the ones that I thought of.
Mm. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Journey, that seems like, you know, real slam dunk. But I do, the food one is really good. There's also a scene where there's no way on earth that a camp that is all about compulsory heteronormativity would be serving sushi. In right. That in Linden, California, they are not doing that. But there's an elaborate Graham eating sushi just so that they can make a that's the only fish she's eating joke. Mm-hmm. And I guess I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it.
But I would just
vegetarian, but fantasizing about hot dogs.
I would just hesitate about that one because I think it could maybe score higher in the Rainbow Bright or bucking heteronormativity. And when I say that, I mean I would score it higher.
We're holding
this
all
there's
hostage.
Just not enough. If it was like Big Night or so, it's not like a food movie. You know what I mean? Like this isn't like the ideal of like food. Like there's two moments, but that does not make 100.
No, Babette's Feast. This is not. But I do. But I appreciate the creative. Thinking outside the box.
We love that about you, John.
Thank you.
When he others Bob, he weaves.
And he's not talking about my hair.
I would say the candy
Let's
color.
Do the, how rainbow bright is it?
Yeah.
How
and I love bright. That Mean Girls is another sort of, you know, queer youth oriented movie. Yeah.
All right, so what I do you want to give? So what would you give? But I'm a cheerleader and how rainbow bright is it?
I'd say like a 92.
92.
Yeah, it's pretty rainbow bright. I'm going to go 96.
96. I'll go 95. If it was like less pastels, it would be 100.
Mm.
Gotcha.
More bolder choices. All right, now we're into the listener wheel.
Another wheel. Fewer categories, but equally beloved. Here we go.
A grand gesture.
Oh, this comes from Heather S. Up, but she doesn't. Thank you, Heather S. She says a grand gesture. One of the characters does some wild grand gesture. Think Cusack holding up the boombox, blasting in your eyes. And why is that make it gay? What's more gay than a big over the top dramatic gesture that makes you want to cry or sometimes cringe? No disrespect to those that are gay, of course. Of course. Thank you, Heather.
Of course.
Oh, we got the big final climactic cheer.
Yeah. That's a grand. We're
yeah. And I think you, the question too is when Megan refuses to acknowledge that she or refuses to do the final performance with Brock, is she doing that in part to save? Is that just her own grand gesture of saying, I'm not going to conform to that heteronormative performance? Does she think in some ways she's saving Graham if she takes the fall? For their romance, but certainly that ending is a massive showing up and performing a cheer in a field for your paramour.
In public. Oh my God.
Interrupting a graduation. Forget it.
Walking up slowly in an empty field, but no one sees you until you right at the very end. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's such a huge grand gesture that it ends on that. And then it's a grand gesture for her parents to commit, well, at least her dad, you know, to be committing to going to therapy for, you
Does
know,
he go to
going
to a group at the
for,
end?
For gay. They call it something else, but it's essentially, I'm going to say it's so critical to the end. I'm going to say,
also,
nice
couldn't
six.
You say the intervention is a grand gesture?
That's true.
Yeah. Michelle Williams saying surprise at the beginning of a gay intervention is one of the funniest things. I had to stop and look up, is she Midwestern? That seems so like.
It's hard to make that much brown look stylish, but they did. The use of brown, I thought was pretty well done.
It just pairs so well with orange and maroon.
It really does. You just need an olive green like refrigerator or something.
Yes.
So a 96. What about you, John?
I'll give it a 92.
92. I'll go 95. Giving an average of 94.33. Pretty good. All right, Aaron, the time has come for you to come up with a category. Oh, I always forget to say this. If you listeners would like to submit a category, you can find a link to the Google form in our show notes. So please submit something. All right, Aaron, the time has come for you to come up with a category that we can use to judge how gay this movie is in all future movies when we add it to the wheel. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I had a few because it feels like, you know, I don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Thank you.
That exists
Thank
already.
You.
And it feels like it would score very highly on like stolen glances or stolen touches, sort of like a Carol or Talented Mr. Ripley, I think, would also do well in that sort of. And so I think that one kind of favors
like a light brush of the fingers.
Yes, that favors sort of a period gay drama. In general, I think my partner said it should be, the category should be Bring It to the Runway, and it should be how many people who've been a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race are on the panel.
Oh, that's like, fun.
This will very much favor, I think, newer films. I'm not trying to I don't want to. Anti-MAME would do terribly in that category.
We are not anti-MAME.
Exactly. That does not feel fair either. So, I would sort of go for something like Stolen Glances, Stolen Touches, or I think it would also score very highly in Queer Menace, which I know is on the wheel.
Right. I like Stolen Glances. I think that sums it up.
Yeah.
That's a nice term.
And it can include finger glancing one another with your touch.
Absolutely. A brushing of the fingers.
Yes. Because there are some good moments of Melanie Lynskey sort of, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what would you give But I'm a Cheerleader in Stolen Glances?
Yeah, I'd give this a good kind of 92. Yeah. I think Carol would be like a 100, maybe.
Sure. Carol. So, what are you doing with that gun, Carol?
What are you doing with all these glances?
Carol.
Did you pay for these?
Where'd you get that gun?
Where are you going?
Glancing with gloved and ungloved hands. Mm-hmm.
Carol. So a 92. What about you, John?
I'll give it a 90.
90. I'll go 91 and complete the pattern. Give it an average of 91. All right, now we're into the bonus categories.
Extra, extra. Okay, so these categories, as their name implies, are bonus. So it's just extra points it gets. So if it doesn't do well in any of these categories, it doesn't work against it. But we're going to rate it from 0 to 10.
All right, the first one. How would we rate But I'm a Cheerleader on a scale of 0 to 10 in musical potential? Can you see a musical being made out of it? Although it seems like they've done it twice.
They have done it. I haven't heard any of it, but they've done it. But also while watching it, I was like, this should be a musical. And then I was like, and it is.
And lots of people have thought that.
Not the first.
Yeah, I feel like you're dealing with sort of a limited number of sets. You're at the high school, you're at the home, then you're at the, you can change out the colors of the room for the different sort of lessons in heterosexuality. So I think that lends itself well to a performance. You know, I know it has been done technically as a musical in England, allegedly.
If it's real, we don't know.
Also, all the cheer stuff, like just the opening number, which is like cheerleader, like that, like component itself
to a number right away. Yeah,
they do choreography, and it seems much more natural than from a breaking into dance. Yeah, and I think an updated version. I would love to see a sort of more updated version. And again, I'm not normally someone who advocates for reboots, but I think there really would be a place for this to have a reboot where there are a couple trans or non-binary youth sure in it, and to kind of really show a little bit more of the LGBTQ pantheon. Yeah, and you know, a little more racial diversity as well. So yeah, I think this could easily be a musical. I mean, I had that one song stuck in my head for days now, the kind of like little glockenspiel and then electric guitar, you know.
Songs from the soundtrack that I added to my starred playlist, because also like,
oh nice,
I'm a 90s alternative person, so like yeah. This is right up. It was like the Dressy Bessie songs I really liked.
Yeah, I think there were two Dressy Bessie. That was very kind of like Belly, Luscious Jackson, that kind of vibe.
I feel like Belly, just me.
No, I loved Belly. I love it. And
Feed the Tree.
Yes,
Geppetto.
Yes. So good. Red. I think Yellow Jackets has really laid a claim to kind of the dark music of the 90s, but this was that kind of bubbly, like almost the Cardigans, that kind of.
Right.
Yeah. I think it would lend itself very easily to a musical format.
So what do you want to give it? Did you say?
Yeah, I say 100. Let's do it.
A 10, would you say?
Oh, yes. 10 out of 10.
So 10 out of 10.
Give it a 10. I think it's a perfect choice to musicalize.
Absolutely. We'll give it a 10. Giving it a 10. Perfect. All right, our next one. Yas Queen. Were there any moments where you said, Yas Queen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've included this in my PowerPoint. I feel like, you know, deciding to flee your camp and getting in a van, and not only that most of the kids do it at first, but then Megan shows up right at the last minute. That's a big yes, queen. You know, and of course, the grand gesture at the end.
Sure. I like when Megan and Graham kiss. That could be a
yes
queen moment. Like, good for you.
Every time they kiss, it's a yes queen.
Anytime Eddie Cibrian does something lascivious, I was like, yes queen.
Andre getting his life on the dance floor.
That's a great one.
With a boa whipping that all over the place. Yeah. I would say 95. Yeah.
A 9.5?
Oh, I'm going to get this scoring system.
That's okay.
I'm just so enthusiastic. Yeah.
I appreciate
9.5. I'll give it an 8.
8. Tough. John was not as enthused.
And more downs.
He said, yes, queen.
I see what you're doing, queen.
Yes, queen. Giving it an 8.83 and yas, queen, which is 3.5 points higher than Bound. All right, our next category, Messy Diva. How are we doing on Messy Divas?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Graham and Sinead are sort of the closest.
I think Mary Brown herself is kind of a messy diva. Like, she's doing actual mess, and she is a diva.
But she's such a germaphobe.
She's such a control freak.
Yeah.
But, like, dramatic, she's psychologically messy. Like, what is she doing to her, like, the kids there is messy. Yeah.
I think I don't think she's, like, messy and going about it.
Messy,
but the effect doing is messy. But
there you go. What more do you need?
She's all about control.
Everybody's sort of narking each other out too about the stolen glances. That's a lot of messy drama thriving. But there's no one that really stands out to me as Michelle Williams clearly loves the drama. When
she couldn't wait to tell everyone she went to an intervention.
Oh, completely. She's ready to pick that lock and steal, swimsuit photographs out of Megan's locker.
The lock's still hot. I can still open it.
Yeah, it's like that's not how that works. But
I didn't think it was huge on Messy Divas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess three sort of, Graham has some mess. Sinead, all the kind of petty drama. Melanie Linsky clearly, is pretty petty.
But none of them are that like diva esque. Yeah. They all seem like teens,
Right.
And like regular.
Not even too outsized.
Right. There's no, what's her face? Rachel McAdams in Mean Girls.
Right. I'm going to go 1.
I'll go 1. I'll revise. I'll go 1. Yeah.
1. All right. I'll go 2 for Mary Brown.
Okay.
All right. Now our next category, macabre. How macabre is But I'm a Cheerleader? You'd think it would be macabre, just a conversion camp.
It's so pastel-y.
And it's a comedy, a campy comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, compulsory. Heteronormativity is macabre. Not loving your children, you know, requiring that your children be straight to love them and fit a gender binary. That's macabre, but that's not in the kind of the fun Addams Family spirit of it all. Sure. I don't know that that's right. Sort of the letter of the law, but not the spirit.
I think Sinead is probably the most macabre, just being a goth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
big Venn diagram of goth and queer for sure. Mm. Yeah. A lot of overlap in that Venn diagram.
Huge.
Making people sleep in a literal doghouse, I think, is a little macabre.
For a week?
Yeah, that's the Victorian mansion had kind of like California Gothic vibes, kind of like Winchester mystery.
Sure.
If it was, you know, I know the thing y'all always say, you know, you're not breaking this out at Halloween.
No. Well, November 1st.
Oh.
No problem. But on Halloween?
I guess like a 2.
A 2.
I'll go 4.
4. I'll go 4.
Giving an average of 3.33. It's all for Sinead. Finally.
Oh, yeah, the aversion therapy. That's macabre. Yeah.
Finally, the last of the bonus categories. Gay actors playing gay roles. We do pretty good here.
We do pretty
it's
good.
It's not 100, but we got RuPaul, Clea DuVall, Douglas Bain as Andre. And there's got to be in that gay bar.
Joel Michaely.
Yeah, this is I spend my week like neck deep in looking through census records, but searching the actors' names and gay or husband or lesbian felt like this feels invasive. But yeah, Clea DuVall, RuPaul, Douglas Bain, Joel Michaely, the actor who plays Lloyd, but not the actor who plays Larry.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, almost everybody in the bar.
Gotta be.
I
think that's fairly good. Like fairly, it does okay. It's not like a slam dunk, but I think it does pretty good.
I think so too.
Yeah, considering how many of the main roles, I'm gonna say at least a 7.
A 7.
Yeah, that sounds right. I will go 7 as well.
Mm. 7. I too will go 7.
Lucky sevens.
I looked up, I was like, I wasn't sure about Natasha Leo. And I saw like, oh, she was with Fred Armisen for 7 years. Mm. Like, oh boy.
So she's gay as hell.
Yeah. All the way say that. And then I just spent 2 hours last night watching all of season 3 of I Think You Should Leave. And Fred Armisen does show up in one sketch and he's very funny in it.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, he's great in Los Espookies.
Very good.
Yeah, she's got, you know, she kind of has that bisexual vibe, but I feel like, Natasha Lyonne's been candid enough about her kind of journeys with sobriety.
Exactly.
Yeah, she would tell us. She would tell us.
Bit of an open book.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, now we're into the iconic category.
All right, so these categories are bigger, broader, more wide-reaching, so it's 0 to 300 for these characters.
Ooh, okay. So there's going to be a singing portion and math.
So the first one, Aaron, what do you want to give? But I'm a cheerleader on a scale of 0 to 300 in homoeroticism. How homoerotic is But I'm a Cheerleader? I think it's pretty homoerotic. It's up there.
For a movie that's like not an erotic movie, yes. It's very erotic.
Because there's a lot of horniness. All these teens are pretty horny the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I remember most about it when I was, you know, hadn't watched it in many years was that it's just this feeling of longing and yearning more than it's on a revisit. There's no nudity.
No.
Simulated, but no. Yeah.
But in some ways it's easier to be erotic without nudity. Like the scene where they're like, the two girls are like making glances at each other while scrubbing a carpet. Come on. It's a beautiful metaphor.
That soldier cutout. They know what they're doing.
And there is a sex scene at the end.
Yeah. And, you know, the masturbation scene, apparently they had to kind of edit a little bit to make it vaguer.
Crop it a
to
little.
Be an NC, which makes me furious that the same year American Pie came out and got an R rating. So you can fully fuck a pie and that's acceptable. But a woman pleasuring herself is somehow taboo. Yeah. Gonna go like 255.
255.
I'm going to go 235.
235. I'll go 240, giving an average of 243.33, which is 40 points lower than Bound. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, our next one, Queer 101. How much of this would you say is an essential queer text? Oh, for sure, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, female directors in general are underrepresented, lesbian directors underrepresented as well. And so I think if you're trying to teach a, you know, beginning a real 101. Yeah. And I think it's a, like we talked about, it's a good kind of access point for a lot of folks. And I think shockingly, I mean, I couldn't have imagined when I watched this in 1999 that the threat of gay conversion camps would feel all the more prescient and threatening 24 years later. So yeah, I think it's a, I think it's a shoe-in. 300.
It's also a fun example of like, because there was that Peacock terrible movie called They Them about like a horror slasher movie set at a gay conversion camp. And it was so suffused. It was like trying so hard to be like important with a capital I, like trauma with a capital T. Whereas this is tackling the same subject matter, but with such like an effervescence. And like, yes, it's acknowledging that this is like awful, shitty stuff, but also we don't have to be miserable while telling our story.
You can laugh at it.
Yeah.
What, a lesbian doesn't have to die in it for it to have been a successful queer representation. Yeah. Yeah. The joy of it, the kitsch. Yeah. The kind of the kitsch and the camp of it all. Yeah.
For sure.
100. 300. And again, it's 86 minutes. You can watch that. Oh, 300. Yeah. You can watch that in a 3-hour night class and you're done.
Absolutely. You have time for discussion and a coffee break. Mm-hmm. What about you, John?
You know what? I'll also give it a 300.
All right. I, too, will give it a 300. If not this, then what? Nice. That's what my question is. All right. Finally, the last of the iconic categories, camp factor. How campy is it? Besides the actual camp.
Besides it being just a conversion camp. I mean, they've got those plastic flowers. They've got all the color choices they're making. You've cast Ming Stoll, that alone.
Right.
It's pretty campy.
Yeah. I mean, it totally shifts a couple times. You know, there's the kind of the real genuine earnest moments that are not campy, but I think a lot of it is that sort of the artifice of it all. I mean, yeah, the watering plastic plants.
That's how you know she's a complete lunatic.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people are sending their children to this woman. Yeah. And the kind of and all the scenes, the dinner scene with the parents with the incredibly pointed grace, that feels very shooting for seriousness, but ending up with comedy. Yeah, so I think it's incredibly campy aesthetically and in a lot of the tone. I would say the only place it loses points for me is because there are really heartfelt moments.
Sure.
So it's it's not I mean, I guess even Hairspray has I suppose some kind of heartfelt moments too.
Sure.
270.
270.
I will say I think it's very campy, but it is very sort of like sweet. It's sort of it's almost like an after school camp, I think, a little bit. So for that, I'll give it 240.
240. I got a quick list of campy things I noticed, which is tougher when the movie is a comedy.
Yeah.
But here we go. RuPaul being credited as RuPaul Charles. Bud Cort in anything. Getting donated donuts. Ming Stoll and Bud Cort being your parents. Stacks of white bread at dinner. A fun use of RuPaul. Trans Ams. Lesbian red flags. Vaginal pillows. Laying in bed and tuning a guitar while eavesdropping on someone using your phone. A conversion camp with an impeccable sense of interior design. A traumatic bris. Playing jealousy games with your crush. Poor long-suffering Sinead. A rainbow-colored box of matches from the bar cocksucker. Multicolor retractable ink pens. Your mother coaching your sex. And finally, a cheer saving the day. So I think it's pretty campy. I'll give it a 267. Give it an average of 259. Not bad. All right, now we're into the crown jewels.
All right, so these categories we don't rate. We just say yes or no. We think it gets a bonus.
All right, the first one, a 50% bonus for a positive portrayal of homosexuality. Does But I'm a Cheerleader have a positive portrayal of homosexuality?
I think
inarguably.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy to say it doesn't.
At
crazy.
Every age.
You'd be mad.
You'd be mad as a hat.
I mean, Larry and Lloyd modeling conflict resolution in
Isn't
front
they
of
have a nice relationship.
Aww, I
feel
that.
Like that kind of like they used to be a time period like where they would people would make fun of like therapy speak, you know what I mean? But now I feel it's just been so like everyone's so acclimated and like that is the culture now.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That you want to model for them, you know, dad and dad are not fighting.
Yeah.
You've come from enough trauma and conflict. You're not going to experience that here. Yeah. I think, again, this isn't a tragic, you know, the ones that seem tragic are the heterosexuals.
True. Right. Well, that's always been the case. So it gets the bonus.
Yay.
Finally, negative 50% of all the points if this is the movie Stonewall.
Thankfully. I did see a stone wall around the mansion, but it is not the movie Stonewall, so it will not lose 50% of its points.
That's good academic
research.
So good
to hear.
Thank you, thank you.
I do teach the movie Stonewall in a public history class as an example of why historic representation being accurate matters in films.
Really?
So, yes, it's so bad that it's required reading. Bad enough to be on a syllabus. Yeah. Yeah.
You watch every class or do you know it well enough?
Oh, no. I just assign them an article. I'm not going to subject people to that. Oh, okay. No. We just read an article about why it's terrible. Yeah.
Watch it. And then we would dish for 2 hours.
Exactly.
All right. That's it. We're done.
Okay. So, Aaron, now that we've been through it all, do you still think you're in the top 5 or top 10?
You know, I don't know about top 5, but I could still see it breaking into the top 20. I don't know. Okay. We get some good wheel hits, but yeah, it's not macabre. I'll be the first to admit.
I'll tell you exactly how it did. Out of a total possible 3,458.39, But I'm a Cheerleader has scored 3,270.06, giving a percentage of 94.55, making it the third gayest movie ever.
Whoa.
Not as gay as Zero Patience, but gayer than Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh my goodness.
Aaron, you did it.
Aaron, you have cracked the top 5. Things are changing. Worlds are
changing. She's spinning in her chair. She can't.
What did it beat?
Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
I'm not going to say eat shit, Hedwig. But eat shit, Bride of Frankenstein. Wow.
Showgirls out of the top 5.
Wow.
That's, and again, that one felt like it was sort of in the genre of 90s movies that included lesbian representation, but it was not for...
Not for
queer ladies by queer ladies.
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Truly. Well, what an incredible way to continue this month.
What a way to celebrate.
Listeners, bringing the heat.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for the next two. The stakes keep getting higher.
They're just going to bring in hardcore porn.
There you go.
Fair
so
enough.
Enjoy that discussion. I can't wait to listen to it.
Is it campy though?
Could you wear that cock ring? Would a drag queen want to wear that cock ring? I don't know.
Is this cum copulation queer 101? I don't know. Aren't there better ones?
I mean, if it were volume 1 instead of volume 17, maybe.
Thank you. But then it gets really good at volume 4.
Sure.
Who can say? I guess we could say if we were doing the judging. But that's enough about cum copulations. Aaron, you did it.
A treat.
Thank you. This has been truly delightful.
I think the other people you're representing or the other ones who pitch it will be very, I don't think they could have asked for a better advocate.
No, we should say.
I hope that they concur. And I hope they're all thrilled that we made it, guys. So. We did it.
It happened.
Gorgeous. We did it.
Aaron, thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything you like to plug, promote, or shill for at this time?
I wrote a book called Mastering Emotions, Feelings, Power, and Slavery in the United States. You can find it on Amazon, on bookshop.org, or University of Pennsylvania Press. Beyond that, it really is a reality that disproportionately queer and trans teens are more likely to end up unhoused. And so, find organizations near you. I know Ruth Ellis Center in Detroit, where I live, does a lot of work providing services and housing and outreach to the many queer youth, like so many of the characters in this movie, who really were left unhoused by their decision to, be their truest selves. Yeah. And trans rights are human rights. This attack, even if you consider yourself to be cisgendered, this attack on trans rights is an attack on all people and is an attack on human rights. And so let's stick up for all of one another, because I think, as we see in the movie, that kind of the move to have that gender binary be so policed is really clearly already coming for cis people as well. It's sort of under the guise of protecting children, and it's clearly becoming an attack on trans adults, on queer adults, on gender non-conforming adults and children. So be safe as Brad, guys.
Beautifully said. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Aaron. You can follow us at Twitter and Instagram at Two Old Queen, TWO Old Queens, and TikTok, although there is an account, but I haven't done anything on it yet.
No.
Not get yet. Off my back. But as soon as I figure out how to make clips, we'll do it. All right. You can follow me on Letterboxd, where I maintain all the current movie rankings.
Yes, we also have, you can email us at Two Old Queens, TWO Old Queens@gmail.com. Let us know if you thought, if we got anything wrong. We love hearing from you.
We got merch. tpublic.com/twooldqueens, where a portion of the proceeds go to the Okra Project. So you're not just helping us, you are helping others.
Yes. And we also finally have a Patreon, Two Old Queens, the retirement plan. For just $5 a month, you get twice the queenage, as we like to say.
Queenage. All right.
It's worth it, guys.
Thank you, Aaron. You heard it right here. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Aaron. We'll see you next time, everybody. Stay safe.
Hi, But I'm a Cheerleader. This is Erin, one of your biggest fans, just popping by to say congratulations on ranking so highly as one of the gayest movies of all time. I've loved you for over a decade, and I knew you had it in you. Mazel tov.
Hey, Two Old Queens, it's Jules. Just want to say congratulations to But I'm a Cheerleader for doing so well in the rankings. I'm stoked. I'm so glad you guys covered it, and thanks so much. Happy anniversary. Love the podcast. Love you guys. All right. Bye.
Hi, John and Mark. This is Ashley in Baltimore calling. Thank you so much for the opportunity to say congratulations to one of my favorite movies, But I'm a Cheerleader. I knew it would do incredibly well, and I'm so excited to listen to the episode. Give me a call if you ever decide to do Serial Mom. Thanks again. Love the pod.
Goodbye.
Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen.
Artwork by Conrad Shin.
And special thanks to Alex Arche and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Bye. We didn't get that right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.